Good afternoon, ANAE members, and welcome to the Supply Chain Leader Learning Series. My name is Anna McCormick, and I'm the Product Manager for ANAE. Before we get started, I just have two announcements. Be sure to submit any questions that you have to us via the Zoom chat window at the bottom of your control panel, and we'll address these questions to Bruce at the end of the webinar. Also, we have a great lineup of webinars this year that you can register for on the ANAE website. Our next call will be with Michael Berryhill, COO at HealthTrust, on April 14th at 2 p.m. Eastern, followed by Ryan Koos, Chief Supply Chain Officer at Sharp Healthcare in San Diego. So please log on to the ANAE website to register for those and many more webinars that we have this year. And as always, if there are any specific supply chain folks that you want to hear from this year, please email me and we'll do our best to have them on. Today, we're excited to have a special guest on our call today, taking over John Pritchard's position. Maria Haynes, partner at Healthcare Links, will be moderating this call. Thank you so much for being here with us today, Maria.
Thank you, Anna. So I am honored to be asked to be here again, and I'll do my best to fill in for John, although we all know it's a big pair of shoes to fill. I'd like to start by thanking Anna and John and the ANAE team for continuing to offer these great webinars and giving all of us an opportunity to stay engaged during these very unusual times. As Anna said, please feel free to write in the chat box any questions you may have, and I'll try to filter those in throughout or at the end of our talk today. I have the pleasure to talk to Bruce Radcliffe, the Assistant Vice President of Supply Chain for Advocate Aurora Health System, managing over a 500 member team with over 27 facilities. Born in Philly and raised in Milwaukee, Bruce has a finance undergrad degree and an MBA degree from the University of Wisconsin. Prior to joining Aurora in 2009, Bruce brought expertise from outside of healthcare, including work for the Disney Movie Club and US Cellular. You may know Bruce from many of the trade shows and podcast appearances within the industry, or as a nominee of one of the Journal of Healthcare Contracting Future Leaders of Supply Chain. I was personally most impressed when talking to Bruce that he has survived this year working from home like most of us, but has done it seamlessly, sharing the house with four kids under the age of nine, including a set of four-year-old twins. What you may not know about Bruce is that he has found a new hobby in whatever spare time he was able to find, starting a backyard maple syrup operation on a property he owns. This month marks the first edition of the Radcliffe Estate Syrup, but Bruce warned me not to expect to see it on the market shelves anytime soon. Bruce, welcome and thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Maria. Thank you for the kind words, and thank you and AE for having me today. I think we'll have a good conversation, and hopefully we won't be covering too much around maple syrup because that was a first batch failure. So hopefully we can talk about successes today. We can leave my hobbies out of it for a little while.
There we go. Well, we recognize you have a full plate and appreciate everything you and your team are doing to support the front line, and grateful for you sharing some of your time with us today. Bruce, let's start with telling us a little bit about yourself and what led you to advocate Aurora Health.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So, you know, healthcare to me, you know, growing up was certainly a bit of a misnomer, not really understood. Thankfully, and blessed to say, underutilized, right? Didn't frequent the doctor or anything like that. But coming out of college with a finance degree, you think you're ready to solve the world's issues through numbers. And quickly, I realized through my initial experiences that customer service and people was really my calling, right? Just understanding how things work, how organizations impact people. Working for Disney, working for organizations like US Cellular, you know, certainly they put their customers first, whether it's quality or customer service. Healthcare to me is basically the ultimate customer service industry, right? And so making a jump from non-healthcare, I was able to tie the two together to say, okay, this is a top tier customer service organization. So I can take some of the skills and perspectives that I had built in other kind of more traditional models and apply those to healthcare, which depending on who you ask, had some successes and some failures, and that's okay. We grow from those. But certainly that's what led me to healthcare was the customer service aspect of what we do.
Absolutely. I do find it interesting that you went from Disney to cell phones to healthcare. That's quite a unique background of businesses and industries for sure. Would you mind describing your supply chain department and how it's organized, including, you know, value analysis and maybe touching a little bit on your current priorities?
Sure. So current structure of the Avatar Aurora supply chain, I view as fairly traditional, right? So really it's organized into two major, I'll call them sub-organizations, both, you know, reporting up through me. One is site-based operations, which is very traditional, right? So oversight of shipping and receiving, par locations, really that traditional logistics piece sits within our operations team. Then the second side of the arm is around sourcing. Again, pretty traditional model. Where things start getting a little bit more unique on the sourcing side of the house is one, how we interact, and I'll touch on that in a second, but is the addition on the sourcing side of a concept around having analytics directly built into the supply chain. Typically, larger organizations are moving towards the model where they have a centralized data or centralized IT/analytics team. Supply chain, we feel, is differentiated enough that the analytics that are involved require some higher levels of familiarity with the operations, the ins and outs, the just-in-time planning, all the way to reimbursement. It's just a kind of unique skill set that needs to know a little bit about everything and not be, the subject matter expert in any one thing. So that's where we diverge a little bit from a traditional supply chain. Secondly, where I was alluding to is the interaction points. And really that is that value analysis piece that Maria, you were asking about. And that is value analysis is actually a taboo word in Advocate Aurora Health, very specifically. And that's because value analysis programs of the past have been more focused on cutting dollars and using historically subpar products, if you were to ask our clinicians, for the sake of the dollar. What we've moved to is a service line integration conversation. And that is, how do we meet with our surgeons, our GI physicians, our nurses, our advanced practice folks, and say, how do we optimize? How do we create value in your interaction with the patient? And we do so in a more efficient, a fiscally efficient way. So value analysis is actually now done in a more collaborative environment than ever before, with folks that have some clinical experience, but ultimately relying on the service lines to help guide us through where we as a supply chain can create value and where we really do need that differentiation or those premiums. So it's a little bit different from that perspective, but a very traditional structure.
Excellent. I do remember a couple of years ago, Bruce, being at actually a panel with Dee Donatelli and some of the value analysis people across the country, and you had mentioned it being a taboo word and the giggles you got from the audience. But I do see you taking that process and extending it to something that is, like you said, more of a coordinated program across the system. You had mentioned, obviously, the analytics. Do you think that is what is most unique about your healthcare system, or is there anything else that you think differentiates Advocate Aurora from other healthcare systems?
You know, it's really two things. Differentiated for Advocate Aurora is we're really a large system that is built in an incredibly small space, right? So we are definitely taking up as much capacity in the Wisconsin, Illinois sector as possible. So to give some concepts, right? So 27 hospitals, over 500 points of care. I think we might have over 50 surgery centers now generically, all within 4.5 hours of one another. So from tip to tail, from our northernmost to our southernmost location, we are really dense. And that creates some unique challenges, but some more opportunities than anything else. First thing is that the Midwestern folk tend to not migrate much, right? Right, wrong, or indifferent. Mm-hmm. Coming to Wisconsin is not something usually done. I think I'm one of the few, but we have a lot of cradle to grave data sets. And that's where analytics starts becoming a differentiator with the supply chain, is because we have these immense data sets. And now we have, singular EHR between the two states. And in the coming months, hoping for October, we'll have a singular ERP and Workday between the states as well and one system. Therefore, our data mining gets really robust and really rich. So the analytics, having that in the supply chain shop, really does allow us to look at things just a little bit differently, but to look at it in scale. So just a quick example, when I'm looking at, total joint, for example, I'm not pulling, you know, hips and knees and shoulders from, you know, two or three sites. I'm pulling them from 30. I have over 100 physicians that are practicing that same fairly standard procedure in different venues of care even. So I have this ecosystem of data that I can look at. And the analytics team is very well poised to help us understand what is actually driving value and what is the me too stuff, as far as, you know, it's not adding either a quality outcome, it's not adding, you know, financial efficiency, it's not adding to the patient experience. And we can start pulling those out again, because we're just big enough to do it and just small enough to not have a really dispersed geography where it becomes problematic.
Sure. You know, it's interesting that you have been able to bring everything onto single systems across the entire system, because the integration between Advocate and Aurora is still relatively recent compared to most mergers. Do you have any key takeaways from that merger experience with Aurora and Advocate?
I do. I don't know if they're always appropriate for the call, but the merger was tough. Let's just put it that way, as all mergers and acquisitions are. But ours being a merger versus an acquisition had some unique perspective to it. And it was a lot like, you know, it wasn't a lot like, it was two equals coming together and trying to figure out how do we, you know, create best practice out of two prior organizations' best practice. And that has, again, pros and cons to it. Luckily, one of the pros to it is you really have to seek out and be able to quantify and justify the best practice that you're doing, right? So there really aren't any sacred cows, because we had two successful organizations coming to the plate to say, all right, now we need to become one. We need a joint identity. So not having one be dominant had some definite pros to it, meaning that everything had to be looked at and questioned. Some of the cons to it is there wasn't always someone, you know, in charge of making that decision. So where we struggled as an organization, might have sputtered initially, was having or not having some of those leadership frameworks built out initially. So that was one of the first things that we did. And as soon as we got that leadership layer identified, things went much, much smoother. But for the first couple of months, it was certainly us just trying to figure out how to play in the sand with one another. And now we truly are one.
Great. Talk to me a little bit about your GPO relationship. Whether you participate in any type of regional aggregation groups or peer networks, and maybe touching a little bit on your distribution partnership.
Sure. So we'll start with the GPO relationship. From a GPO perspective, we are a premier shop. Prior to the merger, we had Vizient in Illinois and we had Premier in Wisconsin. So another opportunity of when you merge as equals, you truly get to do a, you know, pop the hood and see what's the best GPO for where we're at as a system. We viewed Premier in that aspect as appropriate for us at the time. From a regional aggregation groups, we have been part of regional aggregation groups in the past, the most notable being About Health, which was a Wisconsin-based collaborative. We've since stepped away from About Health, and for a variety of reasons, but the major reason being is with the merger, we've now hit critical mass, meaning that any more size isn't really going to help us exponentially. Certainly, every little bit helps, but it's not a straight line as you think, hey, when we get bigger, we get more efficient. It, again, not a smooth curve. It's more like a stepped approach. And we have a ways to go to get to that final step of like a common spirit or someone that large. They have one more, you know, comma in everything, and that certainly helps. So we were part, we are no longer part of regional aggregation groups, don't have any problems with them at all. We just felt as though we had a significant book of business in front of us with the merger and all the synergy targets that come with it. So we took a step back.
Okay. I want to jump into a couple of the questions that are coming in from the panelists, just because they're talking a little bit around the integration before we jump into, I want to go forward with some of the stuff on the pandemic effect. Questions on the integration, two things. One is challenges on a clinical preferential line. And then secondly, as a system, are you seeing yourselves very centralized, or are you still kind of, is there kind of a demarcation between Illinois and Wisconsin? Is it still acting, or is it still now really one system on decision making?
Yeah, that's a It's a great question. Pre-pandemic, I would have said we're absolutely two systems that are learning how to work together. Post-pandemic, I would say that was the greatest thing that came out of the pandemic, and always trying to find some golden, you know, lining in all of it, was we truly are one organization now. We still have some frameworks mm-hmm. that we need to align. One example, or the most clear-cut example, is the Wisconsin is a employed physician model, and Illinois mm-hmm. is more of an independent aligned physician model. And again, not saying one's better or worse, but differences force, you know, different interaction points, which I think was where some of the rest of the question was getting at. And some of the different mm-hmm. interaction points as we try to drive to standard formulary, it's not that it's impossible. It is that you have to interact differently, right? An employed right. physician group, you know, needs to have the exact same care taken with them as you would an independent. You just have different frameworks to work through it, right? You have a more of a formal hierarchy and structure and, again, formality. The independents, you have to do a little bit more of a grassroots campaign, but it is the exact same conversation, whether it's an employed physician or an independent aligned physician, is how do you make sure you're articulating the value to the system or to the patient or to the technology to make the changes that we need. And I can't stress that enough, that it's not the what as far as the conversation, but it is the how you engage that matters in that arena.
Yes, could see that, absolutely. Thank you for that. Let me take a jump and talk a little bit about the big elephant in the room, the year of 2020. What has been the most crucial impact of the pandemic on Advocate Aurora and when it comes to supply chain? You had mentioned a couple of things to me in our earlier talk, but I was kind of hoping you'd hit on some of those pieces for us.
Yeah, so big learnings. I think everybody in the nation kind of shares the same one, is the eye-opening understanding of the resiliency or lack of resiliency in the healthcare supply industry. Right? I'm not going to pinpoint any one thing, but kind of generically. And certainly different organizations had different maturity of understanding that. But for us, it was certainly eye-opening, understanding that what we had thought were, you know, private label owned manufacturing was more contracted manufacturing. No one had really contemplated the pandemic being a true global pandemic, not just a country pandemic. So sure. Through that 2020, certainly learning about where are our weak points of our supply chain? And moreover, though, I also want to celebrate what are our strong points as well. Advocate Aurora, you know, all things considered, I believe through the pandemic did a great job, right? We didn't ever have to go without. There was no scenario where, you know, no one was wearing exam gloves and having to put bleach on them. Certainly, we adhered to the FDA and CDC guidelines around usage and you know, just protocols in general. And from that perspective, the supply chain never broke, but certainly bent. Mm-hmm. And through that bending, we learned where the stress points were. We learned how to get better. And what I'm really proud of is our organization has made investments into building capabilities where we saw weakness. So one example I'll bring up is, you know, domestically produced PPE was a bit of a unicorn pre-pandemic, right? If you were doing it, it was because you had a unique relationship, you had a unique demand, didn't really make sense. Coming out of the pandemic, we're not quite post there, feels like it, I hope so. Coming out of it though, we've made investments in bringing some of that PPE production back into the US, for example, through a partnership with Premier and 15 other health systems, I believe is the number. We've purchased mm-hmm. an equity position within a domestic N95 PPE provider in Texas. So that's just an example of we experienced the pandemic, we got through the majority of the pandemic, fingers crossed, and now we're adjusting behavior. So to me, 2020 was really about testing this framework, testing the structure. Where we saw weakness, we build more resiliency and redundancy or fortitude. And where we saw strengths, we celebrate those. And we made sure people know that, you know, this pandemic was a great learning opportunity.
Right. And you're talking about with Prestige, right? Is the relationship that you had mentioned?
Prestige Ameritech yeah. is the name of the company out of Texas. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you talked a little bit about tying the commodities to index and not stock. Is that through Prestige or something separate?
Yeah, that's the same concept. So I've tried to explain this to non-healthcare folks. So obviously people listening in on this will get what I would say if I was going to speak real technically about it. But the analogy I share with cross industries is in our retirement funds, right? If we were to take all of our investment dollars and put them into one stock, every one of us would look down our nose at the other and say, I don't know if that's the best idea in the world, Bruce. You know, what if? And sure, you know, it would be great. You'd make money hand over fist if you invested in Tesla. If you invested in, make up another company that's down to the penny stocks, you'd be in trouble. So the concept that I've kind of explained to our leaders and others is that we need to start thinking about things that previously we would say, hey, this needs to be a sole vendor relationship or a single manufacturer. And we need to think about what are the specifications that we really need out of that product. Exam gloves is pretty easy. You need chemo rated, you need this thickness, you need the decent amount, it needs to be non-latex, you know, attributes that are quantifiable. But there really isn't a conversation around, do they all need to be produced in the same country? Do they all need to be produced by the same manufacturer? And the way I look at it now is there are certain product categories that we need to look at like index funds versus owning the individual stock. Because if there's another pandemic, hopefully it's not a global pandemic, but if one were to hit Asia and we see China, Malaysia have problems again, great. I have my PPE source in Texas that could help me. I have my PPE source in Norway or Canada or Mexico. And that index fund thought process really is that we will be able to weather the proverbial storm because we shouldn't, we'll have less chance of having a true global issue on our hands that we did before. So that's the concept as I try to tell people what our future strategy may be for certain categories.
Right. You had obviously talked about the PPE. A question just came up on the chat box asking, are you investing in any other domestic production in other PPE categories? Is it just pretty much the one that you're working with today with Prestige?
So I can't give too many details, but we are absolutely evaluating multiple opportunities to bring the right categories back to the U.S. And it, again, depends on the category, depends on the health, the competitive environment of it, right? So let me throw one out there. So, if you look at something that's produced kind of globally, there's less of a need to talk about making sure that we have a strong US hold. Where there's more of a monopoly situation, we have to diversify the manufacturing capability. So it depends on the category, but we are absolutely evaluating a lot of different offers for us to do something similar to Prestige Ameritech with other supply categories.
Great, I love that progressive attitude. You've hit on part of this when we talk about, standardization, working with more or less suppliers and how you're handling those, but how do you see supplier engagement now and changing for the future going forward?
I think supplier engagement is critically important. Through the pandemic, unfortunately, we saw examples of high engagement and high return on that resource. And we saw examples of, poor engagement and poor return. And I should say the third example did exist, high engagement and no return as well. That does happen. But concept being is that engagement is necessary to understand capability. So something that I'm encouraging, suppliers as I meet with them and have conversations is be ready to have that conversation with whether it's the procurement team, the C-suite, wherever your entry point is, and you have to be willing to speak to how your team can add value in that environment, right? What did you do, or it's perfectly fine to say, here's what we learned through our failures as well around how we can help you build diversity, resiliency with the social unrest, the diversity, equity, and inclusion are all different dynamics that as a sales entry point, you need to be adept and be willing to bring value in the non-transactional stuff, right? It's not just give me a PO and I'll send you an item. That is absolutely appropriate and needed, but also we need to be adding value in diversity and inclusion. We need to be adding value in resiliency and diversification, and we need to be adding value into forward planning of return to normalcy. So I encourage folks that as you engage differently now, add those modules to your bag of tricks, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but into your bag of tricks of how do you create value for your customer. That is a big part of the conversation.
That's great information. Thank you. Well, again, given the redirected focus of this year, how does a supplier solution move up on your priority? I had a couple of conversations with some providers in the last few months that talked about how their 2020 plan was derived at the end of 2019 and completely obviously got washed out from the whole 2020 experience. And now we're looking at trying to catch up on 2 years of business. So if a supplier has a great solution, how do they get up onto your radar screen?
That's a great question. You know, to me, and most suppliers are, is one is try to meet, you know, the organization where they're at. So everyone's at a different level of, I'll call it the return to normalcy. The first thing I'd make sure is that everyone understands that you have to meet that individual organization where they are. If they're, you know, fighting, you know, Los Angeles is a great example. They're still having significant problems versus, you know, and pick on the Midwest, you know, rural Wisconsin, right? The numbers are significantly down for now, right? And hoping to stay down. Mm-hmm. So what I would suggest is one, be cognizant of where people are in their life cycle of this. And then two is I'm really interested in speaking with people that one, understand that, and two, can add both a short-term and a mid-term value to what we're trying to do. What I mean by that is if you have some short-term goals or return to normalcy type stuff that can help me, that is definitely worth a conversation. And then think more mid-term is as we evolve and get back to our optimization opportunities, our economic efficiency opportunities, that's that mid-range as well. So to me, those are two values that you can bring now. It doesn't always have to be, hey, how can I get you items that are short today? You know, how can I fix your problem in 48 hours? What I would start thinking about, how can I help you work through the next 3 or 4 months? And then B, how can I help you work through the next 6 to 12 months as you return to, again, I don't want to say your old self because we will never be the same after this, but return to the new normal, so to speak.
Right. You actually had a couple of questions come up, and I'm going to kind of pull them together. One was talking a little bit going back to when you talked about standardizing to Workday, asking what other digital transformation is impacting your supply chain. It's from the way that Aurora Advocate is approaching that. And then also talking a little bit about how new technology is providing you better value, whether that be from telehealth or anything else that may be from a more of a remote care technology standpoint. So data and technology.
All right, keep me honest on this one, Maria. I'll take the latter first because it's the easier of the two.
Okay.
So from a digital, from a new technologies and other such, we've seen obviously an exponential growth in, you know, virtual care, telehealth specifically through the pandemic. That's an example of something that had always been on the radar. And I'm just throwing out some rough numbers here, so don't kill me if the marketing team, if I get this wrong. But concept is, you know, we had something budgeted like 5,000 telehealth visits budgeted for the year pre-pandemic. You know, not a crazy number, but something to get us started. At the end of the pandemic, I got to be careful how I say that. At the end of the year, we hit a stop button and said, okay, how did we do on this? Has the pandemic greatly changed how we do business? At the end of last year, I believe the number was over 500,000 telehealth virtual visits occurred in just the short, you know, 7 month window that we were looking at. It's just an example of how there's been significant shifts in the business. The at-home business is growing, telehealth business is growing, and that is something that we want to retain because we firmly believe that, you know, we need to meet patients where they are, where their needs are. That could be at their house, that could be via, you know, FaceTime, whatever that looks like. But we have found that consumers really view that as a significant value to them in their relationship with a provider. So there are some transformations that we stepped on the gas through the pandemic and we hope to keep. The supply chain is figuring out how do we get ahead of that venue change because that was expected to be a 3 or 5 year shift and we did it in, you know, 3 or 5 months. So the supply chain is very quickly catching up to how do we provide services at different venues of care. Supply chain is typically thought of as a hospital type shared service. Well, clinics got introduced, 5 to 7 years ago when things really started heating up, and that continuum has only increased. So now we have a supply chain that's expanding capabilities in non-traditional venues, and that's where a lot of the transformation will happen. So back to the first part of the question around Workday is that spectrum of care is going to come in a lot of different forms, right? Like I just alluded to, telehealth, at home, surgery centers, nursing homes, et cetera. The technology, though, needs to be more singularly focused. I can't have a purchasing system for my at-home nurses and a different purchasing system for a surgery center and a hospital, et cetera. So we've made the investment to deploy Workday as a standardizing technology. And the reason I bring that up is because we're actually, again, back to diversifying and expanding our spectrum, but we're reducing our footprint on technology variability, really specifically. And that's because as the portfolio grows of venue, we need a consolidation and a harmonization spot in technology to make sure it all ebbs and flows. We need visibility. We need accountability to budgets. We need all the financials that go behind it, HR processes, et cetera. So the Workday, for our perspective, is the major investment that we're making in the next 12 to 18 months to really reduce the technology deployments that are out there. So it's odd because we're taking upon a massive digital transformation in order to do less digital transformations of the future. And it's just an interesting strategy there that I'm fully supportive of. But concept being is fix it right the first time, build it into a scalable but robust platform so you can get rid of the pop-up platforms that might muddy the waters as we grow to more venues.
Gotcha. Again, another question coming in from the audience asking you to describe a little bit more of your relationship with your distribution partner.
There we go. Yep. So distribution partner, is on the horizon. And don't worry, I've spoken to them, so everybody knows. But it's on the horizon for standardization as soon as possible post-pandemic. So I've got that earmarked for a 2021 strategy and transformation to begin, probably operationalizing in 2022. So right now in Illinois, we are an O&M shop with their typical just-in-time, low unit of measure, inventory processes, et cetera. Illinois is very happy with that model, and we saw some pros and cons through the pandemic of how that model can either stretch or bend or break, depending on the situation. In Wisconsin, we're a Cardinal shop, not low unit of measure, but we do have our own CDC that does some level of, again, logical unit of measure from our centralized distribution center or CDC. So through the pandemic, we've seen pros and cons of high reliance on an integrated partner, such as a distribution partner, and the pros and cons of being more of that self-distribution model. So we're at that point now that, pre-pandemic, I would have told you one answer. Post-pandemic, I'm more in the middle camp. So we need to decide what do we look like from a distribution perspective in the coming 12 to 18 months. And that goes back to my earlier comment. If a distributor comes to me today and says, hey, I can solve your inventory, I need that. That's great. Much appreciated. But let's start talking about the 4 to 6 months around strategic planning of how do we get to harmonization and standardization. And let's talk about the 12 to 18 months, the operational plan of what value could you be bringing to me if you had the entire business? What would that look like? Those are conversations where they're getting bubbled up to my level, because it's not just about the need today of, hey, I need inhalation water or else. It is, okay, inventory aside, we know that's table stakes to get into the conversation, but in the next 4 months, here's how we bring you out of pandemic constrained inventory processes, not the inventory itself, the process. 6 to 8 months, here's how we think we could do a joint exploration of strategy. 12 to 18 months, here's how we think we could maybe execute on that strategy. So it all kind of ties together.
Gotcha. Got you. I think we hit about the clinical pathway. We kind of talked about the standardization on employment versus unemployed physicians and the approach. Let's jump a little bit to the continuum of care when we look at outside of the hospital walls. What is Advocate Aurora doing to compete with the Amazon-like patient care delivery, like home testing and even the home health side as we kind of look going forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there's a lot of great work being done. I don't have all the answers, but I can share with you some frameworks and perspectives. And that's certainly, when you think about healthcare, unfortunately, anytime you come into a new venue, it isn't always self-guided, right? The concept of going to school isn't to simply throw somebody a textbook and say, hey, here, read and go for it. You always need that guide, whether it's an educator, a teacher. Our health system views as though we can help supplement and be that guide and not move direct from, hey, I'm used to going to a clinic to get all of my care as my lowest acuity venue, and now I'm just going to order something off of Amazon, like Cologuard, and now I can read the results myself and feel like I know what that means. So there's a gap there. So when you think about the Amazon experience, that's great for when you know what you want, you know the part number, you know I'll get it in 2 days and I'll install it myself. Our system is taking a perspective to say that might be the evolution of the more distant future than people want to necessarily concur on. But in the meantime, there is still a place for a mentor, a guide, or whatever the right vocabulary is that you want to use for that. Our health system wants to be that coach, that helper, whether it's through weight management classes and, food services to exercise perspectives and clubs and other such. To us, part of moving the venue of care is you need the support mechanism to do it. Advocate Aurora Health desires to be the support mechanism that enables the care venue to move. Why you don't need to see your primary care doc in a hospital anymore is because there's clinics that are supported by the hospital. Surgery centers are supported by, the health system. Eventually, we'll get all the way down to more expanded at-home services so that for those things that you don't need to really even leave your home, we can now do those. And the pandemic was a great petri dish for how far can we push our capabilities all the way to the home because of the lockdown scenarios. So we got a good taste of it. We certainly don't have it mastered yet, but we know where we want to go with it.
Gotcha. If I was going to say the saying that change doesn't come from IDNs, it comes to IDNs, what do you think the priorities are on your supply chain practices from a corporate standpoint? Does it emanate from corporate to your hospitals, or does it emanate from your hospitals to corporate? How do you feel like your targets and your 3 to 6 month focus is derived in your healthcare system?
Yeah, this one I can be very proud of, and I could say it is bi-directional, and I'm grateful to be able to say that because a lot of the best innovations or perspectives come, again, both ways. It's either traditionally the corporate entity questioning why, because like I've said, they know just enough to question but not enough to answer, which is good. And vice versa, the IDNs or the hospital saying, hey, I think we found a new way of doing XYZ. How do we get the right support structure, whether that's a contract, whether that's a partnership or an innovation investment? How do we get ourselves to that point where we can mutually move forward? So to me, it really is bidirectional, and I think that's a sign of a healthy organization. Anytime it gets either one way or the other, either it's the decentralized entities telling corporate how it's done or vice versa, I think you can get into a little bit of trouble, but ultimately right in the middle, I think is where you want to be.
Gotcha. I'm getting a question outside of the chat box that came in prior to the call, and it is quite frankly a system I don't know, asking you to discuss the IREC system and how vendors should work with that. Can you give us a little feedback on what that is?
Sure. IREC is just your requisitioning platform for the end user, right? So that's in our vernacular at Advocate Aurora, that is our Amazon-like shopping basket, for lack of a better term.
Okay.
So IREC for us is really an end user thing, but the best way to interact with IREC is through the vendor vetting process and through the sourcing team. And that would be getting your product in contact or approved approved, I should say, is probably a better term because it might not need to be on contract initially to try. And then it gets entered into the IREC system so that it's available for entities to purchase. But that is all done within supply chain. So from that perspective, the way we have it structured is when you have a sourcing manager, let's say somebody who covers orthopedics, that sourcing manager stewards the new relationship through, you know, the different stages, so to speak, of are you, you know, let's get you in the set up in the system as a vendor, let's get you vetted. Here's the items we're going to add to the formulary that will be available to the hospitals. And you know, I can go out and reference, here's your IREC number, your item number to get things ordered. So supply chain is the shepherd of that, which, again, has its pros and cons depending on how you look at it.
Great. I'm going to ask you one final question, Bruce, because I want to be careful of the time and appreciate the time that you've given us. If you are going to, you actually mentioned your distribution project that you're looking at in a year plus. If you're looking at just the short term, kind of 3 to 6 months, are there any major supply chain initiatives that you are working on now that you would be willing to share?
Sure. Right now, distribution is an easy example, and I know it correlates to the question, I believe, is the return to normalcy around the channeling, right? So during the pandemic, for example, we went to a command and control for PPE products, which is tough because, you know, we had all these great technologies, but we broke all of it in order to centralize our PPE into its own warehouse. We actually set up a secondary warehouse in Wisconsin that was only PPE. So the first move was to take all the PPE across the system, send it to one spot so that we could allocate and control appropriately. So that as, again, like we talked about, we're 27, hospitals and, you know, 500 plus points of care. Each one had a different life cycle of the viral rates, you know, the infected rates. So we had to pull from, initially it was the rural areas and make sure that the urban areas had what they needed. As the urban areas calmed down and we saw, you know, kind of the Wisconsin specifically start to spike, we could move things from, you know, Illinois back up that way. So it really was a team effort, but that was all manual because we didn't have time to actually create the systems to do so. So an example of what we're working on in the next, you know, 3 to 4 months is bringing everything back into the systems that, you know, where they should have been in the first place. Because we had to, I guess a bad analogy, we had to break the glass on the fire extinguisher. And now we needed to replace the glass and put the fire extinguishers back. Again, it was a choice. It was done to control, to make sure nobody went without. And again, very proud of that. But it's much easier to turn it off, break the glass, than it is to put the glass back together. So that needs to be a methodical approach because people have been operating under those new protocols for 12 months now. So we got to get them back to where they were.
Absolutely. Bruce, there's a couple other questions that have come up, and Anna, we do have the name, so I might ask that we do those by email and have Bruce respond to those if he's willing to do so, so that we are staying on time with the 45-minute requested time frame. So, Bruce, I wanted to thank you again for your time. This is an excellent conversation. Appreciate everything that you shared with us today, and thanks for all the thoughts on that one.
Yeah, that was so much beneficial information in such a short time. That was amazing. We can't thank you enough, Maria and Bruce, for your time. And for all of our members listening in, we appreciate you joining us. Keep an eye out for my email for the remainder of the webinars this year and registration link. So everybody have a great week, and thank you so much.